All right, we're diving into a case today that really shaped how we view Medicare, government agencies, and the power of the courts. It's Bowen v. Michigan Academy of Family Physicians. You might be thinking Medicare, regulations, sounds a bit dry, but stick with us. This case gets into some fascinating questions about power and accountability in our government.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. It really boils down to this. Congress creates these huge programs like Medicare, but then the question becomes, can the agency in charge of actually running that program, can they just do whatever they want with it? Or do courts get a say? That's what's at stake in Bowen, and it's had a lasting impact.
So set the stage for us. What was happening with Medicare that sparked this whole legal battle?
Well, we're looking specifically at Medicare Part B, which is the part that covers things like doctor's visits and outpatient services. The issue back then was that there was this regulation that really didn't sit well with family physicians who weren't board certified. They were being reimbursed by Medicare at a lower rate than their colleagues who were board certified. They were lumped in with chiropractors and dentists for payment purposes.
I can see why they felt a little undervalued there. They were essentially saying, we're doing the same work as board certified physicians. Why are we getting paid less?
Exactly. And they pointed to a specific section of the Medicare law, 42 U.S.C. section 1395(b)(3), which states that payments need to reasonably reflect the services provided. Their argument was that this regulation just didn't line up with that requirement at all.
So did the courts agree with the physicians on that point?
You know, they did. Both the district court and the court of appeals actually sided with the doctors. They found that this regulation was not rational and was inconsistent with the intent of Congress when they created Medicare.
So round one goes to the family physicians. But I'm guessing the government wasn't going to back down easily.
Oh, absolutely not. The Secretary of Health and Human Services came back with a pretty strong counterargument. They argued that courts shouldn't even have the power to review Medicare Part B disputes in the first place, basically trying to limit judicial oversight of the agency's actions.
Wow, talk about a power play.
Well,
but the Supreme Court stepped in to have their say. What did they decide?
Well, the Supreme Court essentially said, not so fast. They reaffirmed this important concept called the presumption of judicial review. What that means is unless Congress explicitly says courts can't get involved, it's generally assumed that courts have the authority to review agency actions to make sure those actions are in line with the law.
So it's like a safeguard. Congress can't just assume the courts will stay silent.
That's right. The Supreme Court was making it very clear that agencies can't just operate in a vacuum. They have to adhere to the law, and the courts are there to make sure of it.
Okay, so the court pushed back against that attempt to shield Medicare from judicial scrutiny. But take us through the legal reasoning here. Why did the Supreme Court rule the way they did?
Well, they really drove home this idea of the presumption of review. Their position was that unless Congress very clearly states otherwise, courts absolutely have the power to step in and ensure that agencies are interpreting and applying the law correctly.
So basically, silence from Congress doesn't equal a free pass for the agency.
Right. The court also dove deep into the language of the Medicare statute itself. They were trying to figure out what Congress actually meant when they wrote these provisions about Medicare Part B payments.
And what did they uncover in their investigation?
Well, they found that Congress did intend to limit judicial review, but only in very specific scenarios, like if there's a dispute over the exact dollar amount of an individual's benefit payment. They wanted to avoid flooding the courts with tons of minor payment disagreements.
Makes sense. But they didn't mean to block challenges to regulations that impact a whole group of physicians, like in this case with the family physicians.
Exactly, and that's an important distinction. They wanted to streamline certain things, but they weren't trying to give the agency free rein to write any regulation it wanted, and the Supreme Court recognized that.
So the court was essentially saying, you can't just use vague language as a shield to avoid accountability.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And there's another fascinating aspect of the court's reasoning that we should touch on. They hinted that completely blocking judicial review might raise some constitutional concerns.
Okay, now we're getting into some deeper legal waters here.
Yeah.
What were they suggesting?
They were basically implying that if agencies were allowed to both make the rules and then have the final say on whether or not those rules were legal, it would create a situation where a single entity has too much power. It could potentially even violate basic principles of due process.
Right, it's a fairness issue. No one, not even a government agency, should be above the law.
Precisely. And there's one more wrinkle we should mention, something specific to Medicare Part B that the court pointed out.
Oh, I'm curious. What makes Part B unique?
Well, unlike some other government programs, Medicare Part B heavily relies on private insurance companies, they're called carriers, to manage a lot of the day-to-day tasks. They handle things like processing claims, making payment decisions, all of that.
So it's this interesting blend of public and private involvement.
Right. And the Supreme Court made it clear that these private carriers aren't really in a position to decide whether a regulation itself is actually legal or not. That's for the courts to decide.
So they were saying, we can't just leave it up to private companies to be the final arbiters of the law.
Exactly. And that's another reason why they felt so strongly that judicial review couldn't be completely eliminated when it came to Medicare Part B.
This is already way more nuanced than I thought it would be. So the court ultimately sided with those family physicians. But let's zoom out a bit. What about the bigger picture here? Did this case have an impact beyond just Medicare?
Absolutely. Bowen had a significant impact on the entire field of administrative law. This case set a precedent that goes way beyond just Medicare. Think about vaccine mandates or environmental regulations or food safety rules. All of those involve agencies that have quite a bit of power.
So are you saying that now any agency regulation is open to legal challenges?
Not exactly. The key is still that presumption of judicial review. The courts can intervene unless Congress very explicitly states that they can't.
It's not a free-for-all where every regulation is automatically subject to a court battle.
Right. Buffin reinforces that important check on agency power, making sure that the rules are being followed and that those rules align with what Congress actually intended.
This is starting to all make sense. Bowen clarified the role of courts in overseeing these agencies, but let's break it down for the average person. What does all of this mean for them?
Well, in a practical sense, it means if you're a doctor who's participating in Medicare Part B, you absolutely have the right to challenge a regulation that you believe is unfair or illegal. You can say, hold on, this rule about how you're calculating my payments, it just doesn't match up with what the Medicare law actually says.
But what about those disputes over specific payments? Didn't Congress want to limit review in those cases?
Yes, that's right. You can challenge the overall rules, but Bowen doesn't mean you can just sue over every single payment decision. There's a different process you have to follow if you believe your reimbursement was calculated incorrectly before you can go to court.
So it's like you can argue about how the game is played, but you can't complain about every call the referee makes.
That's the perfect analogy. And that distinction between challenging the rules and challenging individual payments is really important. It strikes a balance between making sure things run smoothly and ensuring accountability. We don't want agencies to overstep their boundaries, but we also don't want to clog up the courts with lawsuits about every minor detail.
So you can challenge the big picture, but you have to trust the agency to handle the day-to-day stuff, unless there's a major problem.
That's a great way to sum it up. And that balance has had a real impact on how Medicare is run and on administrative law in general.
It's fascinating how a case about how much doctors get paid ended up having such a big impact on the legal system. We've covered a lot of ground already, from the facts of this specific case to the larger implications for the government and accountability, but there's still more to uncover.
Absolutely. And in part two, we're going to dive into some of the later cases that built on the foundation that Bowen laid. We'll see how those principles played out in other situations and discuss some of the debates that are happening right now about the role of judicial review in the world today. So stay tuned.
Welcome back. It's really interesting to see how this case Bowen v. Michigan Academy from 1986 is still relevant in today's world. We talked about Bowen specifically and its initial impact, but let's zoom out a bit. How did Bowen affect later decisions about Medicare and agency power? Yeah, that's a great point. Having a court ruling is one thing, but seeing how it actually plays out in real life is another. What kind of ripple effects did Bowen have?
One of the most well-known cases that followed Bowen is Heckler v. Ringer from 1984. It dealt with something totally different, patients who were challenging Medicare's decision to not cover a certain kind of surgery, but it actually reinforces the ideas laid out in Bowen.
Okay, so different circumstances, but with a similar legal thread running through it. Tell me more about that.
So in Ringer, these patients wanted to go straight to federal court to argue their case. They thought Medicare's policy was completely wrong, and they wanted a judge to overturn it.
They were trying to skip the normal Medicare appeals process, right? I can see how that could be an issue.
Exactly, and that's where the connection to Bowen comes in. The Supreme Court in Ringer basically said, hold on, you can't just jump right to court. They said that Bowen made it clear that there's a specific process for these types of disagreements, and you have to go through those administrative steps first.
So even though Bowen said people have the right to judicial review, it didn't give them the right to sue whenever they wanted. There's a system to make sure these things are done the right way.
Right. You can think of it like this. You have the right to appeal a decision, but you can't just go directly to the Supreme Court with it. You have to go through the lower courts first. It's about keeping the process organized and efficient.
I see the connection now. Bowen establishes this big idea that there's a presumption of judicial review, but then Ringer comes along and adds another layer, saying, okay, you can seek judicial review, but you've got to follow the rules and the correct procedures.
Yeah, you've got it. These two cases work together to really paint a clear picture of how judicial review works within Medicare, which can be a pretty complicated system.
We've talked about how Bowen played out in a specific case like Ringer, but how about the bigger picture? Did Bowen change how people view government agencies and their power? Like, did it impact administrative law overall?
Bowen is actually often cited as a really important case that supports what we call the Chevron doctrine. This doctrine says that when a law is kind of ambiguous, when it's not totally clear what Congress meant, courts should generally just go with the agency's interpretation of a law.
So if Congress passes a law that's a little vague, the agency gets to decide what it really means, and the courts will usually agree with that interpretation.
Yeah, that's the general idea. But Bowen actually adds a caveat to that deference. It reminds us that even if an agency can interpret a law, it doesn't mean they're automatically right or that their interpretation can't be challenged. The courts still need to make sure that the agencies are acting within their power and not doing things they're not allowed to do.
It seems like there's a balancing act going on. We want to give agencies some space to use their expertise when interpreting laws because they are the experts in their fields. But we also don't want to give them unlimited power.
You got it. Yeah. That's exactly the tension that Byrne highlights, and the courts play a crucial role in maintaining that balance.
This is all making sense. But things are always changing in the legal world. Where do we stand now? Is this presumption of judicial review still as strong as it was when Bowen came out?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. And it's one that we're going to tackle head on in the last part of our deep dive. Stick with us because things are going to get even more interesting.
And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Bowen v. Michigan Academy. We've been on this journey exploring how a case about Medicare payments turned into this landmark decision that really shaped how we think about the balance of power between the courts and government agencies.
Yeah, and as we wrap things up, we're left with this big question, right? Is that presumption of judicial review that Bowen established, is it as strong today as it was back in 1986? Has it stood the test of time, you know, with all the changes in the legal world?
Because things have definitely shifted since then. We've seen how ideas about agency power have changed, and there have been all these discussions about judicial activism and what deference really means when it comes to agencies.
Oh, absolutely. Bowen gave us this fundamental principle that courts have a role to play. They can review what agencies are doing. But the real debate now is in the details. How do courts actually apply that principle? When do they decide to defer to an agency's judgment? How much weight do they give to the agency's expertise? That's where things get really interesting.
So it's not so much about whether judicial review exists anymore. It's more about the specifics of how it's actually being used. Courts still have the power, but are they using it differently now compared to, say, back when Bowen was decided?
Exactly. Think of it like a spectrum. On one end, you've got really strong judicial review where courts are scrutinizing everything the agency does, carefully examining their interpretations, and not afraid to overturn decisions they don't agree with. On the other end, you've got a more hands-off approach where courts are giving agencies a lot of leeway, trusting their expertise, and mostly upholding their actions unless there's a really obvious error.
So where are we on that spectrum today? Have things shifted more towards giving agencies more leeway, or are the courts still keeping a close eye on them?
That is the question, isn't it? And there's no easy answer. There are a lot of people advocating for more deference to agencies, especially in really technical fields, like when it comes to healthcare or environmental regulations. Their argument is that judges aren't scientists or economists. They should trust the judgment of the people who have that specialized knowledge in these really complex areas.
I can see their point. If an agency is working with complex data or scientific models, it seems like courts should at least consider their expertise.
Of course, but here's where it gets a bit more complicated. What happens when the agency's decisions have a huge impact on society or when they involve basic rights? Can deference go too far and end up undermining accountability and the rule of law?
Right. That's the dilemma, isn't it? We want agencies to be able to use their expertise effectively, but we also can't just blindly trust them to always make the right decisions, especially when the stakes are high.
Exactly. And that's the heart of the debate. Some recent Supreme Court decisions have just added more fuel to this fire. Cases like West Virginia v. EPA, where the court limited the EPA's ability to regulate greenhouse gas emissions, have made people wonder if we're seeing a shift back towards a more assertive form of judicial review where courts are more willing to step in.
It's like this constant back and forth between giving agencies deference and scrutinizing them, with the balance changing depending on the specific case, the court, and even the political climate at the time.
That's a great way to put it. And where we land on that spectrum has a real impact. It affects everything from healthcare to environmental protection to how our government works as a whole.
It really is amazing how this case, Bowen, which started out as a debate about how much doctors should be paid by Medicare, has ended up having such a huge impact on the legal system. We've talked about so much, from the specific details of the case to these big questions about the balance of power in a democracy.
And that's what makes studying law so fascinating, isn't it? Even really technical legal disputes can often bring up these deeper questions about who we are as a society and how we try to govern ourselves fairly and effectively.
So what's the takeaway for our listeners today? What are the key points they should remember from our discussion of Bowen and its impact?
I think the most important thing to remember is that judicial review, while not absolute, is still a vital safeguard in our legal system. It helps make sure that even when agencies are trying to do the right thing, they aren't overstepping their legal authority. It reminds us that power, even in the hands of experts, needs to be balanced and checked.
And just as important, maybe even more so, this case shows how crucial it is to stay engaged, to stay informed, and to stay involved. These debates about power in our government are ongoing, and they affect all of us.
Well said. The strength of a democracy lies in the willingness of its people to participate, to question, and to hold those in power accountable. Cases like Bowen, even the ones that might seem dry or technical on the surface, remind us that the law is a reflection of our values and our constant pursuit of a more just society.
That's a great point to end on. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Bowen v. Michigan Academy. It's a case that continues to shape legal conversations and reminds us that the law is constantly evolving. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep diving deep.